There are lots of reasons why someone who once loved to read could have fallen out of the habit. In the last year, many people have reported feeling unable to focus their attention enough to read, with pandemic anxieties always nearby. But if you haven't been a big reader lately, or if you dropped the reading habit when you got out of school, there's a way to get back to it, and it's a Read Across America Day. So if you're looking for an excuse, if you needed one, how about that? You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like you used to be a big reader, maybe as a kid or in school, but you lost the joy of it? Have you fallen out of the habit in the last year, the pandemic year? Or on the opposite side of things, have you found it to be a really good time to get some reading done? What gets you motivated to restart reading if you haven't done it for a while? And is there a book you'd like to suggest for someone else that'll maybe spark their reading love again? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Margaret H. Willison is a librarian and culture writer based in Boston. She's one half of the Two Bossy Dames newsletter, a third of the Appointment Television podcast, and appears as a regular fourth chair on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. Margaret, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for having me.
Well, I described two different types of people there, Margaret. People have read a lot during the pandemic. People have had trouble concentrating during the pandemic. I'll confess, I'm both of those people. I've been through both of those stages in the last year. What are you hearing from the reading community that you interact with?
The vast majority of the people I interact with are in the cannot read at all category, just totally fried focus. And I'm certainly in that group. I got one book for Christmas that I managed to read in like a day, and my brain has never felt better. It was like being able to drink a glass of water after walking in the desert for 40 days.
Yeah, I have found when I'm in those stages where I just can't focus reading, when I am able to make myself do it, and often it involves turning off a computer and hiding a phone or something like that, when I've been in those stages and I do read, I feel way better about life. Like it's something I've really missed when I make the time to do it.
Yeah, the churn of news is so addictive right now, and has been so addictive, I think, for all of us for the last 4 years and more. But you only actually learn new things so often, you know? Like you feel like you need to see every single thing that comes along down the line, but you're not actually getting very much information from it. And your health is definitely better if you unplug for a second and just exist in the moment you're in.
Now, if somebody says to you, Margaret, this is me, I want to get back to reading again, whether it's, you know, during the pandemic or it's someone who loved reading as a kid but lost the habit, I don't know, what do you suggest to them as ways to start breaking the ice and getting back into it?
So one of the things that I think shifts our relationship to reading as we get older is that it stops being an entertainment activity and it shifts into being a prestige activity, right? So you don't necessarily go to the bookstore and buy the book you think you won't be able to put down, buy the book that is just going to completely absorb your attention. You know, you buy the book that you just heard Terry Gross interview the author of, you know, and you buy the book you think you'll want to talk about at a dinner party. And I don't want to say that those books cannot be compulsively readable experiences, because frequently they can be. Because you're using a model that isn't centered on your own taste, which could be, you know, World War II pilots' memoirs, you know, or it could be, as it often is with me, romance novels set in 19th century England. Because you're not attached to your own taste in this space and instead you're pursuing something else, the odds that you're going to find something that you don't really click with are higher. And I think the trick is to figure out what it is you like in media generally. You know, what is it that makes a TV show something you binge on Netflix? What is it that makes you sit up and pay attention in a movie? And talk to somebody, a bookseller or a librarian, to see if they can help you pinpoint what you love and find versions of it in books.
And Margaret, I know we've had conversations on this network over the years, you know, when e-readers came in, does reading an electronic book really count? And then audiobooks, does reading an audiobook really count as reading? If I'm reading stuff I've read by you, right? Yeah, it all counts, right? The mode isn't really the important thing.
Anybody who tells you mode delegitimizes your reading can go jump in a lake. That's my heartfelt opinion.
And for audiobooks. Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say, I mean, an audiobook is, it is a different cognitive experience than reading. Absolutely. But it is a profound immersive experience with a narrative. And it can also give you a sense of the quality of the person's writing even better than a written thing can. Because to be translatable to a vocal performance, right, and not just words on a page, shows like remarkable dexterousness, both on the part of the narrator and on the part of the reader. So it's a wonderful experience of a narrative, and it can be a wonderful way to experience the imagistic quality certain writers have. So for some books, I'd honestly recommend it as a way to experience the narrative the author has created over merely reading it in a book.
Talking to Margaret H. Willison, librarian and culture writer based in Boston. She is giving us some advice, some inspiration to get into reading, get back into reading, especially after a tough year where, as we've heard, a lot of people had a hard time sitting down and concentrating on a book. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What has been your reading experience over the last year or so? Reading more, reading less? Bursts of both, like me. Call 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Amber is with us in Green Bay. Amber, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's been your reading story, Amber?
I'm a dyslexic child. I hated reading as a kid. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, I started challenging myself. And in 2020, I actually read or listened to 211 books.
What?
Wow.
Okay. You're working in bulk there, Amber. What was it that, what did you do to go from being a dyslexic kid who hated reading to reading, 200 books plus in a year? What got you in the door there?
Audible and Libby. Hands okay. down. Being able to listen to a book versus having to slog through reading it.
Awesome. Do you have any favorite audiobooks to recommend, Amber, before we let you go?
The Outlander series is amazing, and I just read Sea Monster. It's one of the new Pulitzer Prize winners. It was
Fantastic.
Really good.
Amber, thank you so much for sharing that story. Margaret, pretty cool story.
Incredibly cool story. And just like such a clear demonstration of what we lose when we try to police the boundaries of what counts as reading.
Thank you so much, Amber, for sharing that at 800-642-1234. Do you have, Margaret, some favorite audiobooks that you would recommend as audiobook experiences in particular?
Yeah, I do have some favorites. So I studied 19th century literature in college, and one of the nice things is you can get classic novels for less money because they're out of copyright. And there is a particularly remarkable a version of Elizabeth Gaskell's novel Wives and Daughters, narrated by Prunella Scales, who is a stage actress and a small-time sitcom star in the UK that is just, like, I've listened to it. It's 26 hours long, and I've listened to it probably 5 times, like, conservatively. And similarly, the Sherlock Holmes stories are incredible in audio because they've got such good rise and fall in the action. And there is a version narrated by a narrator named Simon Vance that is remarkable. That is the complete works of Sherlock Holmes. So all 4 novels and all of the short stories. And I have also listened to that, which is, I think, 80 hours long, like 3 to 4 times through. I use it to fall asleep at night.
There is something magical about whether it's a print book or e-version or audiobook, like when you're in a good thing. And you realize you've got tons of it left, whether it's a long series or just, you know, you got hours and hours of entertainment
totally.
Ahead of you. That's a great discovery.
Yeah, almost nothing better than that.
We asked our listeners on the Ideas Network Facebook page to weigh in. Bev said it's hard to suggest books without knowing a person's interests. She suggests talking to your library staff, share
yes,
your interests.
Arb.
And they could offer suggestions. I happen to have married into the library profession. And I know librarians love this. If you like blank, check out blank. Can you talk about that process a little bit?
Well, it's what I was talking about at the early part of the show, which is that so much of our recommending process, if you aren't trained in it, is not based on individual taste, right? But it's based on decentralized ideas of prestige or quality separate from taste. And to the extent that quality exists separate from individual taste, one, it's a frequently problematic category, right? It's frequently kind of tied up in old-fashioned, racist, classist, sexist ideas about what counts as serious literature and what doesn't. So there's that. And then the other thing is, it's like, the trick is not just finding what is quality, but it's finding what's quality that is really going to sing for you. And so maybe I'm really loving, you know, the show Sex Education on Netflix. Frankly, I am. It's a great show. But it's not going to be to everyone's taste. Not everybody likes narratives about teenagers. Some people have a hard time taking things with deeply saturated color palettes seriously. And equally, lots of people love Ozark. And it is never going to be for me because it is just, it's dingy. It feels narratively and visually dingy to me. And I just don't gravitate towards it. It does not make my brain light up with joy. And that's what you get when you talk with somebody about what their personal taste is like, and when you pull out the things that really speak to them and can connect it to other media in different spaces. You know, you find the stuff that really sings for a person.
We're talking to Margaret Willison, librarian and culture writer based in Boston. You can hear her regularly on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast. We're talking about how to get back into reading after taking a break, long or short, maybe after having our reading patterns disrupted by the pandemic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has it been a good year of reading for you, a rough year of reading? Do you have a suggestion? Do you need a suggestion? And do you like a physical book, an ebook, an audiobook? All of the above, call it at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, talk to more of you coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Margaret H. Willison, librarian and culture writer, talking about how to get back into reading, maybe after some time off, even if that's been since you were in school, or maybe a pandemic-related reading break. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What are you reading? Has your reading been disrupted? What gets you reading? 800-642-1234 is the number. We'll go back to your calls now. Michael is with us in Kaukauna. Michael, hi.
Hello. Have you heard of a thing called LibriVox? It's a free service where they have volunteers reading public domain books, and several readers you can pick from, the voice that you like, and it's a great resource, especially in a time of pandemic where people are laid off and don't have resources to pay.
LibriVox. I'm looking at it online, LibriVox. That sounds like a great service. I'll also put in a plug for Bard. If you have a visual impairment of any sort, it's been a lifesaver for my dad. Sources of great audiobooks, Margaret. I hadn't heard of this LibriVox.
My mom is a huge fan of LibriVox. She's always recommending different readers to me on it. So I guess, folks, if you want some tips, tweet at me and I'll source them from my mother.
Fantastic. Michael, thank you for sharing that. Uh-oh, Michelle Good, our technical director, reminds me, chapter a day here on the Ideas Network, a great source of some wonderful audiobooks, too, with fantastic readers. Let's go to Zachary now in Waukesha. Zachary, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about Zachary?
I recently, for the first time, joined a book club, and in 2020, in a virtual format through an online platform called Book Clubs with a Z. It helps me connect with other alumni, actually from my alma mater, Carroll University in Waukesha, to be able to, you know, plan our upcoming discussions, vote on upcoming reads, and then schedule things through Zoom to chat virtually. Our last one actually had people from Arizona, the Carolinas, Minnesota, and Wisconsin all tuning in together, reading the same stories over the month.
And Zachary, how has it been doing that? Because you think of book clubs, you think you get together at somebody's house. How has it been doing them online?
Actually, really nice. I think just the concept of book clubs has kept me really accountable for the first time ever. I normally read in bed at night and typically find myself falling asleep. But I know when I have an upcoming book club meeting, it kind of forces me in that last week to get them done, knowing that we're going to have a lot of really good content to discuss together.
Fantastic, Zachary. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Margaret, I've never done a book club. What are your thoughts?
I'm impressed with Zachary. I'm so glad it works for him. I am unbook clubbable. Like, as soon as reading becomes assigned, I become allergic to it. Yeah. I have this "you're not my mom" response, even if it's a book I'd otherwise love. So, and then my other problem with book clubs is I don't care, or I care more than can be sustained by like casual chit chat over wine about my books. And so like, I would be a nightmare member of a book club. I would not read the book for months. And then one time I would read the book and I would come in and somebody would make a comment and it'd be like, excuse me, you have not quoted that correctly. If we could all flip to page 87, we can source the quote a little more exactly. I think you'll find you're reading it wrong.
Uh-oh.
Real bad scene for me. But if it works for you, congratulations. Something I've found that's really effective is a reading club instead of a book club, where people can be reading anything they want to. It doesn't have to be the same book, but you still get together with other people who have similar ways of reading to you. And you talk about the different things that you're reading at the moment in time, what you're liking about them. You try and figure out the common threads between them. So if, like me, you are unbook clubbable, but you are looking for a communal experience centered on reading, a reading club rather than a book club might be something to try.
Zachary, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking about reading, how to get into it, how to get back into it with Margaret H. Wilson, librarian and culture writer. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Got a few minutes and a line is open up for you. You can also comment on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Margaret, I wanted to talk about branching out and trying new things in the reading world and not pursuing our same taste. This is on my mind because my parents were raving about Pride and Prejudice, which I'd never read. And I was like, I don't know if that's really my thing. And I got it from the library and I stayed up past my bedtime reading and it was so darn good.
Oh,
and now
wow.
Actually Sense and Sensibility is waiting for me at the library now. And it only took me, I'm not going to say how many decades of not enjoying that book. How do we explore new things in a rewarding way?
Well, Rob, just fun fact, I'm going to be teaching an online class on Emma in a few weeks. So your timing is perfect in getting into Austin, in my opinion. What I think is great is if you have someone in your life whose taste you trust, but who likes things in the category you're sort of trying to hook your way into. So for example, I really can't do horror. I'm anxious enough as is. Like, I don't need fictional anxiety created for me.
Fair.
However, my roommate, Mallory, is a huge horror fan. And in other genres, we have very aligned tastes, and she seems to understand what I like. And so she's been really, really great at sort of pointing me in the direction of things that are going to give me a taste of that genre, but that are still going to be working within the aspects of media that I like, that are going to be telling stories in a way I gravitate towards or centered on characters I find particularly appealing. And so I think that's really your big, big trick, is sort of talk with people whose taste you trust, who understand your taste, and see if they can help you identify good bridge books into new genres and new spaces.
What's a horror book that a non-horror reader really likes?
Horror is probably putting it a little bit too strongly, but it's a very, very spooky ghost story that I really enjoyed called A Certain Slant of Light by Lauren Whitcomb.
Okay. I'll maybe check that out. Time for one more caller. Nancy is with us in Milwaukee. Nancy, hello. Oh, we lost Nancy. Oh, no. Let's
horror
see.
Horror movie in of itself.
Our producer says Nancy's been a big reader since age 3. Nancy says people just need to walk through a library to love books. Well, that's been harder to do. You can't, only now are we able to walk into a library and browse or a bookstore or what have you. I don't, how much has that, do you think, interfered with our reading, Margaret, not being able to just browse a shelf?
I think that has definitely interfered with our reading, because so much of the joy in reading comes from serendipitous discovery. Like, I think for people my age, I'm 35, like a major, major joyous memory are like the scholastic book fairs that would come to your school, where they would just be sort of like laid out on tables all over your gym and you could just go around and pick things up and look at things. And something about seeing materials in that sort of unhierarchical way, right, where a library is especially good because it's not just brand new books, right? It's books from all throughout time, and it's zero risk, right? You can just take it home for completely free. That said, your libraries probably have incredible, incredible digital resources available, and you should definitely be taking a look. You can get a lot of audiobooks and a lot of ebooks that way. And you could possibly make something like the serendipitous experience of browsing a physical store by just going to your social networks and saying, you know, who has a favorite childhood book they think I should read? You know, setting up a trade system with other friends who want to try some new stuff and have some serendipitous experiences and sort of seeing how that works for you.
All right, Margaret, I got to ask, what book is in your hands or your ears these days, or what's next on your shelf? You can pick one.
Well, here's what I would say. I think in Wisconsin, you guys still get a little bit of snow this time of year. I know certainly in Boston we do, which means that my most popular recommendation, I'd say kind of all time, is a book called Bellwether Rhapsody by an author, Kate Racculia, R-A-C-C-U-L-I-A. And it is about a bunch of music-obsessed teenagers at a weekend musical festival who get snowed in a giant decaying hotel in the Catskills. And on what turns out to be the weekend of a double murder, the weekend anniversary of a double murder that happened there, and one of the people goes missing, and you're following a bunch of different characters of a bunch of different ages through this very evocative setting. And it is just totally engrossing and funny and suspenseful and delightful. And if you are a person who loved the Westing game when you were little, you really owe it to yourself to try this one out.
And the title again?
Bellwether Rhapsody.
Bellwether Rhapsody. A lot of twists and turns, yes, just in the description. Margaret, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Rob. Thank you for having me.
Margaret H. Willison is a librarian and culture writer based in Boston. She is involved with the Two Bossy Dames newsletter, the Appointment Television podcast, and often appears on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. She joined us to rekindle our love of reading.